If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.
This episode of the Potterverse is brought to you by MinuteWithMary.com. In addition to loving all things Potter, I also love playing with makeup. You guys know this. MinuteWithMary.com is a place to go for all of your beauty and skincare needs. I personally would love to help you feel more confident and creative when it comes to your skincare. And let's talk about lashes, because lashes are what make me feel human again. It is my elder wand, my mascara wand. And my favorite mascara I give to you, our podcast listeners, at 15% off. Just head on over to MinuteWithMary.com/discount to grab your elder wand, your mascara, at 15% off as well. From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to the Potterverse. It's a podcast dedicated to the book and film universe of Harry Potter. So grab your favorite wands and time turners. Let's step into the night and pursue the Flighty Temptress adventure. Everybody, and welcome. My name is Mary Larson.
And Mary, that was a great save. That was a great save on the intro there.
Oh, how come?
Because you're like, hey, let's pursue. That is proof, ladies and gents, that we record that intro every single time.
Yes, doesn't in case matter. Anyone was wondering.
I know, yeah. So my name is Blake. Thank you so much. And kind of like Draco, if I was a Hufflepuff, if I found out I was a Hufflepuff, I think I'd leave.
I spoke with you at the end of last episode.
I know, that's why I did it.
I spoke with you, and that's why I said it. No more Hufflepuff hate.
That's why I said
none.
It.
None.
Exactly why I said it.
Oh my goodness.
I had to get it. Come on.
You know?
Come on, that was in the chapter. You can't blame me for it. I only read what's in the chapter.
Gosh, Blake, I can't even handle you right now. I can't even handle you. Apologize.
Oh, that is the best.
Too late to apologize.
Oh, that is the best.
All right, so you ready? You ready for my quote from this chapter?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Or no, am I too far ahead in the Google Doc? Can tell me.
No, you have to introduce the chapter, and then you got to do the thing.
Okay. I'll do it. So the chapter that we're looking at, of course, is chapter 5 in the Sorcerer's Stone, or the Philosopher's Stone, depending upon which version you are listening to or reading. The chapter is called Diagon Alley, or Diagonally.
Diagon Alley.
Or Diagonally.
Not Diagonally.
Trust me. This is a debate, which we will discuss. the quote I'm going to actually read is the last bit of this chapter, because I just felt so magical reading it. Your ticket for Hogwarts, he said. 1st of September, King's Cross, it's all on your ticket. Any problems with the Dursleys, send me a letter with your owl. She'll know where to find me. See you soon, Harry. The train pulled out of the station. Harry wanted to watch Hagrid until he was out of sight. He rose in his seat and pressed his nose against the window, but he blinked and Hagrid had gone. After all of that magical stuff, woo!
Just goodbye.
Goodbye. Let's go back to the Dursleys. And the one of the reasons I wanted to say this is because I think it's so interesting that in the book, Harry goes back to the Dursleys for a month.
Yes,
which
absolutely.
In the movies doesn't happen. And if you haven't reread book one for a while, you miss that. You miss that he buys all this stuff. And then he goes back there, back home,
yeah,
with Dudley having a pigtail and everything. And it's literally within one day, on his birthday, he's introduced to this magical world through Hagrid, through all of his adventures shopping in the bank, all on his birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of his birthday, with the blink of an eye, he has a ticket to go on the Hogwarts Express on September 1st, and he's sent back to the world that he's always known, except now, within the past 24 hours of his birthday, his magical 11th birthday, his entire life has changed.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. And it's one of those things that I love about this book simply because, you know, you expect, I think, you expect the author to go from this magical thing that happens on his birthday, and we're shopping, and we're doing all the fun stuff, and yay, Hagrid's here, and yay, we're gonna have fun, and it's not that at all. We do those things, but the problem is we go back to normal life.
Yes.
It's a total subversion of every expectation that we have. It's a subversion of the magicality, if you will. It's a subversion of our expectations of how the story just flows. No, yep. No. What happens is the author just takes us to this magical world and kind of disappoints us. Mm. And it shows the fact that she respects the story and she respects the realness of what the situation is giving us. It's just not every kid just all of a sudden gets their letter and poof, the next day they're in Hogwarts.
No, right? Doesn't happen that way. Doesn't happen anyway. Before we go into more of this episode, though, we wanted to welcome you all for checking us here on Blake and I podcast about a bunch of different things. You can find out more by heading to maryandblake.com. There you can find our podcasts about Outlander, Game of Thrones, Gilmore Girls, This Is Us, and so many more things that we love to podcast about and geek out about. We've got podcasts and blogs. And if you enjoy the Potterverse, if this is something that is bringing you joy, especially in times like now, and if you would like to help continue to make this possible, you can do that by going to jointhenerdclan.com. And I will tell you, it has a lot of Outlander language in it because Outlander is one of the shows that we podcast the most about, but it's a way for you to contribute to keep this going for us. So we truly appreciate any and all support. As little as $2 a month gets you benefits on our site as well. So we really, really appreciate those of you who are already patrons at OutlanderCastClan.com, otherwise known as JoinTheNerdClan.com. So for now, let's get into the show.
I solemnly swear that I'm up to no good.
You know, now that I look at the the Google Doc.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, we were way off.
I know.
Totally off.
He told you.
Why do you just do what the doc says? You're Ron Burgundy.
I am. Okay, so we start. How about this? How about you do the quick recap of chapter 5, Diagon Alley?
Sure. It can't be Diagon Alley. It can't be. No. You want to know why it's not Diagon Alley? It's not because in The Goblet of Fire, when Harry does the port key, he says, Diagon Alley! And he gets sent into the bad place.
But isn't it so cool that it literally is diagonally? Because, yes, it's Diagon Alley, okay? It is Diagon Alley.
Yes.
But it's diagonally because it's this parallel universe. It's not parallel. Mm-hmm. It's like a diagonal universe. Like, it's here. It's chilling. It's kind of on the same wavelength as us, but it's going in a different direction. It's got magic. It's got wonder. It's got all sorts of great things that we learn about on this road. On a road that veers off diagonally in London.
It veers off.
Okay, so give us the really quick recap of this very saturated chapter that, in my opinion, could have been two different chapters. It could have been bank and shopping.
Yeah, essentially, the way that it is, Harry and Hagrid wake up and they go off to the Leaky Cauldron.
Yes.
And they see the Leaky Cauldron. Everyone's there. And Harry experiences fame for the first time, really. Then they go into Diagon Alley. Now, see, I can't even say it. Diagon Alley. They go there. They do all the shopping. Then they do the bank. And then Harry goes home.
Okay.
That's it. That's what it comes down to.
Okay. I got you. All right. So what are the coolest things? So we start things off, as you said, in the Leaky Cauldron.
Is it Nocturne? Jennifer L. Dominick saying, is it Nocturne Lane or is it Nocturne Alley? I think it's Nocturne Alley, right?
I think it's Nocturne Alley.
Yeah, it's Nocturne Alley.
But
it was my favorite place in Universal Studios.
Because it's nocturnally.
Oh, look at you.
Guys, I'm like a professional nerd, okay? Diagonally and nocturnally.
You nerd.
You're welcome, Blake. You're welcome. So that's how you can remember. Nocturnally and diagonally.
Sorry, this is a late one.
Okay. Very late. I need to have my own sound effects.
The kids keep touching the board.
They keep coming in here and they're pretending to do their own Potterverse podcast, and it's really, really cute.
They're touching everything. They touch my whole system, and it's driving me crazy.
So they go to the Leaky Cauldron. Oh, no, first off, no, let's not even say that. First off, they wake up because they slept in the house with the Dursleys after Dudley got a pigtail, this huge bomb was dropped on Harry when it was his birthday. Hagrid wakes up, and Harry wakes up actually first, and he doesn't even want to open his eyes. He's so afraid that it didn't really happen.
Right.
And then he wakes up, and it's Hagrid's coat that comes off of him, and there's an owl rapping on the window that he thought was actually Aunt Petunia, like, tapping on his cupboard, but no, it's real. Mm-hmm. And you dive into the magical world, because in comes this owl with the newspaper, and it's tearing apart Hagrid's coat, and Hagrid says, oh yeah, give it 5 knuts, and Harry's like, what? What's a knut? Oh yeah, it's those ones, you're fine. And they wake up, and Hagrid once again feeds Harry. Mm-hmm. He tells him, like, eat some cold sausage, I might have some cake. Yep. YOLO, you know, like, let's not waste this beautiful chocolate cake that I made.
Right.
And let's be real, your birthday, who doesn't want to have cake for breakfast? Cake and sausage sounds amazing. I feel like...
That's what she said.
I feel like people who are Potter fans need to have that as their birthday
Anytime
breakfast.
There is a sausage joke on this show, I'm going to play Michael Scott.
There's going
to
be a lot.
we've kind of gone a little further ahead here, and there's one thing...
I just started the bloody chapter.
I know, that something that I want to bring out of this is that Harry thinks it was a dream, which means if it was a dream that Hagrid showed up to the cottage in the middle of the ocean, that means the entire trip to going to the ocean was a dream. And if that's the case, then it was a dream that they were getting all the letters.
Everything was a dream.
Everything was a dream to
Imagine
Harry.
If literally everything was a dream. If Harry just wakes up one day under the cupboard, still being a 10-year-old boy. Not just a dream about a flying motorbike, but what that all meant.
There's part of me, the cynical part of me, the absolute cynical part of me wants this whole thing Harry to wake up at the end of the book and be like, it was a dream.
No.
Like, that's the cynical part of me.
Stop. So Harry worries that a dream, it's not. Hagrid and Harry jump in the boat that Vernon and his family had used to get to shore. Hagrid whips out his little magical umbrella and uses it to, like, scoot across quickly. And he tells Harry, like, you're not going to tell anybody about this, right? Like, I'm not supposed to use magic now that I've got you. I flew here. How do you think he flew there, by the way?
I have no idea. This is one of the burning questions I've had. I actually have another burning question, too.
I think he flew on a hippogriff.
Who knows? Seriously.
Well, he needed to fly. It's not like he had a broom with him.
Yep.
I didn't have the motorbike, because then there would have been a motorbike there. So it needed to have been a creature that could have flown back. So it's either a thestral or a hippogriff, in my opinion.
Okay. I don't know. I'm not 100% sure.
And why couldn't he just apparate? Because he's not a full-fledged wizard?
Right.
Poor thing.
Right.
Poor thing. So when I look at the size, I would prefer a hippogriff or a Hagrid. I feel like that'd be a much more comfortable ride.
Well, one of the things I actually have a question about is, there is no mention of how he got there. And then also, there's no mention of the Dursleys at all during this entire conversation, during the entire last... Like, they just kind of, like...
Good.
Go... They slither back into the cracks. But more importantly, Hagrid takes their boat.
Yep.
How do they get back?
Maybe he, like, just tapped it with his little umbrella and sent it back.
I hope so. Just, otherwise...
That's what I'm assuming, because they had to get back, because Harry has to go see them at the end of this day. So they end up going into London, where Harry's never been before.
Oh, that's right.
Harry's never even been to London. And it's, you know, Blake and I live in Rhode Island, which is a mere three and a half hours away from New York City. And when we talk with people who live in the United States and they say, like, oh, have you been to New York City? And we're like, of course we have. Of course we've been there. I always think that people who live in England have all been to London. Mm-hmm. They haven't. Like, just like people in the U.S. haven't all been to New York. So that was a really interesting thing for Harry not to only have this wizarding experience, but even the muggle experience of going to London for the first time.
Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of things happen in this chapter, too, where Harry asks, well, Hagrid will say something, and then what's happening is Harry will just repeat the thing back to
him.
People
say they can't hear us.
Well, they have to be able to hear us.
Okay.
Because they have to.
Okay. I'll
Hold
check
on.
In on
let
this.
Me, let me check one thing.
Okay.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that makes sense. So we're good. Yeah. No, it makes sense.
Can you hear us? Let us know in the chat. Can you hear us?
Angela asks us, what does disapparate mean? Is that like beam me up, Scotty, in Potterverse?
Yes.
Yes, kind of. Apparate, the ability to apparate means that you just kind of, you transport yourself from one area to the next.
Okay, some people can hear us.
So everybody can hear us.
Some people can't.
I don't know why.
Okay. But you learn how to apparate. Ooh, what year is it? What year do you learn how to apparate? Is it your seventh year? Is it your sixth year? Is it your fifth year?
Oh, that's a good question.
I'm right. Disappointed to the in Google myself machine, right now.
To the Google machine.
Okay.
Vamp for me.
But you learn how to apparate later in your training, and Hagrid got expelled in his third year. And that's actually something that we hear about in this chapter. Of course, Hagrid doesn't have a wand. He's just kind of like pointing this little cute pink umbrella. And then when they do go to the shops, when they do go to Diagon Alley and they go to Ollivander's wand shop, Ollivander, of course, is spitting out all this knowledge like, oh yeah, I remember your dad's wand. I remember your mom's wand. I remember your wand, Hagrid. And like, it's cool at first, and then it gets really really sad. He says, oak, 16 inches, rather bendy, wasn't it? And Hagrid's like, it was, sir. Yes. Good wand, that one. But I suppose they snapped it in half when you got expelled, said Mr. Ollivander, suddenly stern. Yes, they did, said Hagrid, shuffling his feet. I've still got the pieces, though, he added brightly. But you don't use them, said Mr. Ollivander sharply. Oh, no, sir, said Hagrid quickly.
We're already at Ollivander's?
No, I'm just saying that like Hagrid probably didn't learn how to apparate, but he still is carrying around these bits of his wand and his little pink umbrella.
Got
and it's
it.
Really important that here he is meeting newly 11-year-old Harry, and he's now done magic in front of Harry twice.
Yep.
When he is not supposed to be doing magic. And so it's a really interesting dynamic that we get to have with this grown adult Hagrid who was expelled, which why did Dumbledore let him get his like, equivalent of GED and get the guy a bloody wand? Like, you know, it wasn't his fault. It was Voldemort's fault. Why doesn't this guy get a new wand and get forgiven?
All right. So I'm going to give us a preemptive nerds.
Okay.
Nerds! Students at Hogwarts may attend ministry administered apparition lessons during their sixth year.
Boom.
And then take their examination once they turn 17. It is shown that although it is possible to apparate without a license, it is not usually done unless in lessons and is illegal. And I just want to call out Jessica, Michelle, and Tracy. They were here telling us that it was the sixth year as
what
well.
What I'm picturing in my mind is Dumbledore taking Harry out of the train station and bringing him to Slughorn's, and they apparate, and Harry's very like woozy from it. So I knew he couldn't do it in the beginning of his sixth year, at least. I'm getting confused. But that's one of the things that I really wanted to point out is that, hey, you know, Hagrid doesn't have the official training, I assume, to learn how to apparate. He still is carrying around these bits of his broken wand. Mm-hmm. He tells Harry twice, I'm not supposed to be doing magic. So please, like, keep this a secret. And
right.
Imagine doing that with an 11-year-old who you just met. Like, by the way, I'm not supposed to be doing this. So just keep it between the two of us. And Harry's cool with it. Harry has a really great judge of character, mm-hmm. aside from one massive flaw that he judges incorrectly, and it leads us to judge this person incorrectly for an entirety of a book series. Snape. But he trusts him, and he also learns that people can be good, and something weird must have happened in this wizarding world for Hagrid to have had his wand broken, for him to be expelled and yet still be the keeper of the keys,
sure.
of Hogwarts to really actually be like in charge of
and
this
then,
entire place.
Yeah. And then eventually become the guy that runs all the game, all the wildlife.
Mm-hmm.
So he's the gamekeeper.
Mm-hmm.
Melissa Carolyn asks a great question here on Facebook. How come the pieces of Hagrid's broken wand work, but when Ron's snapped in half in book two, it goes crazy and doesn't seem to work right?
See, I bet you, that's a great question. I bet you Hagrid doesn't really try like extremely good spells, and I bet you Ron could probably do like a little something. But...
And remember, at the time, you know, Ron was still iffy. You know, he was only in his second year. So I think Hagrid probably has more magical knowledge at that point than Ron does. So that seems...
Maybe Dumbledore put a little extra special super glue on it.
Some magic glue.
Because why didn't he get a new wand? Come on. Justice for Hagrid.
Well, that's one of the things that I really want to talk about. But I want to talk about that when we get to Ollivander's finally. But something that happens in this chapter, I already alluded to it earlier when we were talking.
We've been talking this entire time.
When we were talking earlier, and then people said they couldn't hear us, but that okay. They could. Hagrid will say something, and then Harry will ask him. He will repeat the same exact thing, but mm-hmm. in a question form.
Ooh, yes.
It happens a lot in this chapter. And as I was reading it, I was getting annoyed. So it was like, give him five canuts. Canuts? The little bronze ones. Oh, okay.
But you do know that this is like our life, right? Like you say something that you think I know,
right?
And then I ask you, and then you say some more stuff, and I'm like, "What is that?"
then,
well, it's like when the baseball commissioner, you know, did this thing, and I'm like, "What's a baseball commissioner?"
Right, I agree. But when you do it in succession 40 billion times, it goes from canuts to then going to the bank, and like, yes. Wizards have banks? Yes, they're run by goblins. Goblins? Yeah, goblins run it. And then he says, "How did you get here?" Harry asked, looking around for another boat. "I flew." "You flew?"
He's 11. He's like literally just brand new 11 today. Do you know our kids?
Yes.
This is the 11-year-old equivalent of, but why? But why?
We're talking about the Ministry of Magic. The Ministry of Magic? What does that do?
And Hagrid, bless his heart, one of his best virtues is patience. Okay? So Hagrid doesn't get as ruffled as you did. This is why they didn't send Blake Larson. Okay? Dumbledore knew to send patience to Hagrid.
Hagrid, said Harry, painting a bit as he ran to keep up. "Did you say there are dragons at Gringotts?" "Well, so they say," said Hagrid. "Crikey, I'd like a dragon." "You'd like a dragon?" Oh.
However, everything that Harry has... Hagrid reiterate is an important plot point for the entire series. There are dragons at Gringotts, and it's a very safe place, and it's a place that you wouldn't want to break into. Maybe this will be an important point. Let's restate that, okay? Yeah. There's a Ministry of Magic. Actually, Dumbledore was asked to be the Minister of Magic, but he turned it down, and now the Minister asks Dumbledore all the time. There's a Minister of Magic?
Right.
And they look to Dumbledore a lot? Oh, well, this is quite interesting. There's goblins who run at Gringotts. Yes, they're really tough, and they make sure nothing gets stolen that you're not supposed to steal. Mm-hmm. Oh, really? Let's remind everybody, like, key, important, huge things that are going to need to be ingrained in not only our minds, but Harry's mind. You know, Harry, one of the things that I love and yet drives me loony in Outlander is Claire's amazing memory. Like, she remembers things, and people do this. I don't have that memory. I don't even know what I had for dinner a couple hours ago, okay? Like, I go crazy. But there are people in real life, but also book characters who are fictional, who are able to remember these things. And to me, having Harry ask these questions makes it more real to me, because I can relate better to this than someone with more of like a fantastic, fantastic memory, like someone like Claire,
sure,
from Outlander.
Yeah.
So for me, this served a point of ingraining it
absolutely
in the reader's mind and in Harry's mind. So when you do come into see goblins at later points, not just in this chapter, or with dragons, or knowing that Hagrid wants a dragon, which serves as an important point even in this book alone, you're reminded about it.
Yeah, but we have a bunch of commenters here, like Angela and Jessica saying, "Blake, these were written for kids. They have to reassure
and for Mary,
and they have to reinstate all those things for kids so that they understand it." And yes, I do I get that, but just as an adult reader reading this chapter, it does become grating to read so many times after. But the thing I do like about this chapter is, again, it continues the world building and the fact that there is a bank, there is a ministry of magic, there is money. Nothing is just for free in this world.
No.
There is a bureaucracy in this world. There is a government in this world that has a say over everything. And the most important person right now, apparently, is, in fact, Dumbledore, who doesn't want to be part of the Ministry of Magic. So, again, it shows that the world, yes, is indeed magical, but it runs parallel. It is not an entirely separate universe. There are foundations.
It's diagonally, almost.
Oh, look at you.
Bam! Just like that. A winner!
Look at you.
Can we pivot?
Sure. Let's pivot all you want.
So we're in the Leaky Cauldron, and one of the things that I loved in the book versus the movie, everyone knows who Harry is. Once again, it's not like, oh, and I'm here to bring Harry to go get his school belongings. Like, he just says, I'm here in Hogwarts business. Everyone stops. The bartender's like, oh my gosh, it's Harry Potter. And everyone, Harry spends, I think it said 15 minutes shaking people's hands. Mm-hmm. And they were just so excited to meet him, introducing themselves. He even meets Daedalus Diggle, the guy who he bumped into a long time ago. And Daedalus Diggle bugs out, oh my God, he remembered me. Like, people are really, really excited. And I just loved that once again, this is how famous Harry is.
Right.
That people know him just by looking at him. Hagrid did not have to introduce him.
And the fact that he is that famous there, everybody knows him, yet Harry doesn't take that for granted.
I love this chapter, in case you can't tell.
Oh, yeah, obviously.
And it's the number 5, which is my favorite number.
He doesn't take it for granted. He sits down. Well, he doesn't sit down, but he takes a moment for every single person to shake their hand and to talk to them and say, wow, okay. Like, and how this chapter opens in comparison to how it closes is fantastic. And we'll get there, because it serves as a great moment of reflection for Harry, where he says, all these people have these expectations of me, and I don't know I can do this. I don't know if I'm cut out for this. But that realization happens after a whole bunch of events in this chapter. Before we get there, I do want to talk about the letter that the school list. And of course, you know, there is this great thing where it's like work robes, okay, it's a uniform, a pointed black hat, a pair of protective gloves, a winter cloak.
Which I'm sad they got rid of the pointed black hats.
Those were so stupid.
But it was
just the beginning
of getting rid of their wardrobe, and it bothered me in the movies.
No way. I'm out on those hats. Way out on those hats.
I mean,
hats.
The hats I can get over, but like once they brought in regular street clothes on the regular, I was not okay.
And then we have the wand, the cauldron, the crystal phials, the telescope, the brass scales. And it's a great push and pull. This, again, there's the tension between the real world and the wizarding world. And you're seeing all of this. And there's no better example of this tension than the books. The list of books are fracking amazing in every way. Because you expect them to need robes and uniforms and wizarding worlds and all that other stuff. Mm-hmm.
I mean, he does. He has a standard book of spells, a history of magic, magical theory, beginner's guide to transfiguration, a bunch of different magical herbs and fungi, magical draughts and potions, fantastic beasts and where to find them. We'll learn more about that. And then the dark forces, a guide to self-protection. I want all of these books.
So, what I love about it is the standard book of spells, grade 1 by Miranda Goshick. History of magic by Bathilda Bagshot. Magical theory by Adalbert Waffling, A Beginner's Guide to Transfiguration by Emmerich Switch, 1,000 Magical Herbs and Fungi by Phyllida Spore, Magical Drafts and Potions by Arsenius Jigger, Fantastic Beasts by Newt Scamander, and The Dark Forces, A Guide to Self-Protection by Quentin Trimble. The names of these books, of the books and who they're written by, is a thing of beauty. Mm-hmm. Because all of the authors are either tangential to the titles or they're referencing a feeling of the titles. I think my favorite one is The Dark Forces, A Guide to Self-Protection by Quentin Trimble. Like, the dark forces make you tremble yes. as a person, and it is Quentin Trimble who is writing it. Like,
yeah.
How, or Phyllida Spohr is the one who writes The Thousand Magical Herbs and Fungi. Like, a spore! Like,
it's really cool.
The author... Oh.
Had fun with this bit. And even here, planting the seed of A History of Magic by Bathilda Bagshot, who also comes back in the future books. There are so many great seeds, and when you are doing a reread, especially if you haven't reread these books in a while, or maybe if you haven't read the books at all and you've just watched the movies, having these seeds planted in book one are so fun and so rich to be able to come back to.
And one other thing happens here, too, is Harry is introduced to the Leaky Cauldron. And since we're here again, I love...
We talked about Harry Potter.
We talked about diagonally, and
yes.
we talked about how the worlds are parallel. But they are...
They're not parallel.
Well, they are. They are parallel. But they are interwoven.
There you go.
And the cool thing about it is the Leaky Cauldron is right there. It's right there in London for everybody to see. As long as you see it. Mm-hmm. And it is a gesture for all of the people who feel like they have a place and will find it if they know where to look, if they can find it within themselves. And having Harry be able to go to the Leaky Cauldron and have this place and see it and be a part of it is really special for him.
Agreed.
It is really, and those little bits of how these worlds are parallel, there is tension, but they're interwoven and you can see them as long as you're willing to see them.
So while we're at the Leaky Cauldron and Harry's shaking everybody's hands, he gets to meet one of his professors, Professor Quirrell, who we also learn about is going to be Harry's Defense Against the Dark Arts professor. Now, spoiler warning, spoiler warning, spoiler warning. Professor Quirrell's going to be getting us into some issues, as we all know. And Hagrid explains to Harry, because Harry's like, why was he stuttering? What's up with that guy? And he says, you know, he has a brilliant mind. He was fine while he was studying out of books, but then he took a year off to get some firsthand experience. They say he met vampires in the Black Forest, and there was a bit of nasty trouble with a hag. Never been the same since. Scared of the students, scared of his own subject. Now, where's me umbrella? No, he's not scared of the students. He's not scared of his experiences. It wasn't a hag. It was Voldemort. He went out into the world researching vampires and doing other things, and in the mist bumped into Voldemort, who stuck himself on the back of his head. That's why he hasn't been the same ever since. But nobody knows.
Right. Nobody knows that yet.
Everyone's just like, this poor bloke. He went out on sabbatical and like...
Came back and he was all...
He hooked up with some hag, I think, who broke his heart. I don't know.
Took way too much peyote and just and just figured it out, man. Didn't figure it out. Just he went on like a fear and loathing trip. That's what happened.
So after the Leaky Cauldron, they start going out. They want to go shopping. And Hagrid tells Harry, no, we have to go to the bank. And they go to the bank. And this is one of the first descriptions that blew me away in regards to buildings in the Wizarding World. We got such a great description of what Gringotts Bank looked like. And just so casually interwoven. It wasn't just like, here's how it looks. Descriptor, descriptor, descriptor.
Yes.
It was like in between different sentences, you were allowed to visualize this beautiful tower. Building. And then what I really love is, you know, as they go through the second set of doors, silver this time, there's words engraved upon the doors saying, enter stranger, but take heed of what awaits the sin of greed. For those who take but do not earn must pay most dearly in their turn. If you seek beneath our floors a treasure that was never yours, thief, you have been warned, beware of finding more than treasure there. And of course, spoilers. They try to break in, and they do break in
right.
to Gringotts in many books later. And I love that we are painted this picture of this vast marble hall and these goblins working with these rubies the sizes of pieces of coal. And we get to really learn the interworkings and how important it is that the goblins are the ones who keep this treasure locked
right.
down.
And the goblins are not easy folk. Like, you don't mess with a goblin, especially when it comes to Gringotts. again, it's showing you, the viewer, or the reader rather, that this world is magical. Mm-hmm. But it's not all fun and games. It ain't all sunshine and rainbows, this world.
No, no.
And it's indicative of the kind of struggle that is going to be coming for Harry, not just with Voldemort and all of the things that go along with the Death Eaters, but even his struggles at school and how we're actually introduced to one pale-faced boy.
Oh, we're not there yet.
Well, we soon will be.
We still will be, yeah.
Pale-faced boy, Draco Malfoy.
Yes, but while we're in Gringotts, I wanted to point out a couple things. Vault 713, two very magical numbers. Seven, okay, of course, is a magical number. The author weaves seven in a ton of times. And of course, a lot of people think about 13 when it comes to a magical number. And they go in, and it is a crazy, crazy experience going through Gringotts. They have to zip along on this little cart that Hagrid has a really hard time dealing with. Mm-hmm. For those of you who haven't been to the Wizarding World of Harry Potter in Universal Studios,
wild.
The Gringotts ride is so, so fun. And I, hold on, where is it? Broop, broop. Oh, here we go. There we go. I'm getting there. But I just thought about people who are elderly or who get motion sickness. Uh-huh. Like, how much would you loathe going to the bank if you had to go to
Oh my God, you had to go on this roller coaster?
Here's Hagrid being like, oh, the muggles, they're going to annoy us to make things easier. You know what's easier, Hagrid? An ATM. You're welcome. What did muggles do for you? The ATM. Can you picture like a dear little Aunt Betty who's like fragile, having to get in a cart with the goblin?
Bathilda Bagshot.
Yes, picture Bathilda Bagshot getting into that cart, just trying to get her money for the week to go to the deli.
I gotta go get my ciggies. Gotta get my ciggies and scratchies.
Oh my goodness gracious.
Ciggies and scratchies.
I love it. I love it.
You know Bathilda Bagshot's all about that life.
Oh my God. No, I don't.
She
no,
does.
She totally is.
She totally is. Of course she is.
So they get out of the leaky cauldron. Hagrid is not feeling well, and he's like, I'm gonna go get something to eat because I don't feel good. This is terrible. And
I love he's like, come on back in this infernal cot and don't talk to me on the way back. It's best if I keep me mouth shut.
Like, I love how just informal he is with Harry. He just met Harry, and he's basically like, listen, 11-year-old, you've asked me so many questions. Like, it's like how I am in the car with my kids. But he's also saying, like, I'm about to spew, Harry Potter. Please, just be quiet. And he sends Harry, 11-year-old Harry, who just learned he's a wizard a mere 10 hours ago or whatever.
Yep.
He says, why don't you go shop for yourself for a little bit?
I'm gonna get a drink.
Here's a ton of money. That should take care of you for a few years, okay? I need to go get a nip. Reading this through the eyes now of a person who's been a teacher, who's a parent of a person who's now a parent, I was like, can you imagine just being like, here's loads of cash. Can you please go shop? I need to go get a stiff drink.
I can't wait to do that for my kids.
Oh my goodness gracious.
I'm so excited.
So Harry walks on in to go get fitted for his robes. And like you said, he meets this pale-faced boy who reminds him so much of Dudley.
And the comparison is apropos on multiple levels. Draco is the representation in the wizarding world for Harry what Dudley is. In many ways, Dudley was part of a much more ingrained family. He was spoiled. He thought himself special. He thought himself important enough where he had a gang. He picked on Harry, and he believed that Harry was below him. And the same thing goes for Draco. And the way that this is introduced is really important. That's really important for the story going forward, because the things that Draco are talking about, which is wizarding families of old in comparison to wizarding families of that who are not pure blood. Mm-hmm. They're not like when he asks Harry, oh, your parents, one of us.
Right after Harry says, my parents are dead.
Right. Oh, my
but
God.
But they were one of us, right?
Yeah, they were one of us.
Harry, dude, such a good bluff.
Yep.
Have you had moments in your life like that where you are just out of the blue, either confused, people are incredibly intelligent and you're like, I am not on that level, or they're talking about something that you have no clue about and you've had to fake it?
Oh, absolutely. All the time. That's like half my life.
I used to party at Harvard.
Oh, God.
When I was in college, I would take a bus up.
Yeah, you take all the freaking Harvard kids and put them on a bus.
Let
and
me
see
tell you.
Later. Send the bus off a ledge.
I can schmooze with some of the smartest people there. Oh, yeah. A lot of ums. A lot of ums. Because doesn't mean you agree or disagree.
It's just an acknowledgement.
It's just a
Yeah, the centrifugal force of the trigonometry and the bilateral cameral mind.
I went with a bunch of people that were there, and I was Daphne from Scooby-Doo, so I just kept like walking around. It was a Halloween party. It was a Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego Halloween party.
Of course, it was freaking Harvard kids.
It was like Hogwarts. Whenever I explain the Harvard dorms to people, I'm like, it was Hogwarts.
Oh, it absolutely
is. It really was, and that's why I kept going back.
It absolutely is. Freaking Harvard.
Plus, I dated someone there.
I know you did, and I don't even want to talk about it because Harvard sucks.
It's okay.
Freaking Harvard. Get out of here.
Poor thing. Okay, so he's in here talking to who we later find out is Malfoy. And Malfoy, the pale-faced boy, yeah, he's just a spoiled little brat, acting a lot like Dudley, putting down people who are not purebloods, and putting down Hagrid. So here's Hagrid, and he's just like making fun of him, and Harry knows to stand up for Hagrid.
Right.
And this is where you start to really see the bravery in Harry. You get to see these very Gryffindor traits of like standing up for what's right and the fairness, and like, no, I'm with him, and I think he's great, actually. And Malfoy tells you, no, he was expelled, and he's known to just get drunk. Now, mind you, Hagrid did just say he was off. Now, I will say, I don't think Hagrid said he was going to go get a drink. I think he said he was going to get a little something, because he comes back with ice cream, which, let's be real, Hagrid, if you're feeling nauseous, not the best thing to get.
Milk was a bad choice.
So I'll give him credit that maybe he didn't get a drink, maybe he just went and got a little ice cream, but we all know Hagrid probably took a shot and then had some ice cream.
So I think the whole thing with Draco here is really important, because what this does for Harry at the end of the chapter is that it gives him a sense of unease, even though he does stand up for Hagrid, and even though he is in early signs of Gryffindor in this chapter, all of those things still come back to him when he is wondering.
Yes.
These people think I'm famous. I'm not sure 100% if I do belong. I don't know about Quidditch.
I don't know Quidditch means.
I don't know any of this stuff. I don't have my
God
own
bless
broom.
You.
Like, yeah,
yeah.
Right? Does this really work?
Am I a pureblood family? I don't know what that even means. Or, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. So he goes and he sits down with Hagrid, who gives him this chocolate and raspberry with nuts ice cream, which, can we just sit there for a moment? Hagrid has now fed this boy multiple times, after commenting that he probably needed a little bit more food. And the last time that we got to talk about Harry having a sweet whatsoever was when Dudley and his friend got to have a super cool ice cream, and all Harry got was this sweet little lemon icy,
right,
and he was still thankful for. And here he is getting a beautiful chocolate raspberry nut ice cream. Just cause,
you know, why not?
And he's asking him, you know, what is all this stuff? And Hagrid's filling him in on all this stuff. Like, oh my gosh, you don't even know what Quidditch is. Well, poor Hagrid. But good thing it's Hagrid, right?
And we still keep getting this information. By the way, just because Harry is now enveloped into this world doesn't mean that he's enveloped fully. He's still learning, just like we are. And we're getting a sense that this is a blur for Harry. We're getting a sense that all of these things are happening, and they're happening very quickly. And it keeps going. It keeps going. I have a sense that the world is moving fast for him until we get to Ollivander's. And when we get to Ollivander's, all of a sudden, everything just stops.
Because like you said, I mean, this was probably, 13 hours ago that he found out he was a wizard? He found out at midnight that he was a wizard.
Mm-hmm.
So it's what, maybe 1 p.m., 2 p.m. by now?
Yeah, absolutely.
And he's just taking it in such great strides. He's hanging out with a stranger. He's being told your parents died because some wizard blew them up. Like, his entire life is being torn apart with all of these things. You know, the Gringotts Bank, Quidditch, all this stuff being thrown at him. And he's just taking it in such great stride. And I think it's because his life was so bad with the Dursleys that to have this escape and to have this like hope that there is something else more for me is great, but it is very, very overwhelming. Not only does he not know about this world, but it just happened mere hours ago. And then, like you said, he walks into Ollivander's.
Yeah. And something.
Oh, and he also learns about the Hogwarts houses from Malfoy.
Right, exactly. Slytherin and Hogwarts, and then we have...
We have the Hufflepuff reference. And Hagrid puts the seed in our minds that there wasn't a witch or wizard who went bad that wasn't in Slytherin. It's Hagrid who does that. So what constitutes bad? Because I disagree.
Well, I feel like murdering a bunch of people is probably bad.
Yes. But do you know anyone who's bad who wasn't in Slytherin?
Pansy Parkinson. She ain't bad.
She's Slytherin.
She's Slytherin, but she ain't bad.
No, they're not saying that everyone in Slytherin is bad, but they're saying people who
oh,
are
there
wasn't.
Okay, if you went bad,
Slytherin.
I disagree with that statement. Yeah, I don't know who else.
I would say Gilderoy Lockhart, very bad. Okay?
Yeah, and he was a Ravenclaw.
Yep. Ollivander skirts with being bad in later books. Okay, and even Harry gets this really weird feeling.
Peter Pettigrew, exactly.
And Peter Pettigrew, who was a Gryffindor. So Ollivander, he flirts with some dark stuff. And definitely Gilderoy Lockhart, who was Ravenclaw. I would beg to differ that I don't know a bad Hufflepuff.
Oh, that's a good question.
So there, sticking up for the Puffs.
I don't think I know a bad Hufflepuff.
Yeah.
I don't.
So there, Hagrid.
So there are two things.
Even though I love Hagrid,
there are two things at play here in Ollivander's store, which, by the way, is my favorite part of this chapter. I think it's my favorite part of the first movie. By the way,
curious,
very curious.
So our little lass says,
"Nope,"
curious all the time.
Yeah, just because
curious.
Of that.
Curious. We're like, you're five. Why do you do this? Why do you ask us so many questions? Because I'm curious.
Creepy. I'm just so curious. It's really because of John Hurt, really. John Hurt, the way that he acts in the film, and it's similar to my love of Snape and Alan Rickman. Mm-hmm. John Hurt is the one who sells this.
I would actually beg to differ that Ollivander is sold quite well in this book. The way that he keeps inching closer and closer and closer.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
And then he touches his scar. Personal space, man. Personal space.
Yeah, like I know the wand that did this and so on.
No, he says, "I'm sorry I sold the wand that did this," okay, thanks, man. Cool. But like, stop touching my face.
I think there's some great stuff that happens here. When Harry walks in, Ollivander immediately knows who Harry is. "Ah, yes," said the man. "Yes, yes. I thought I'd be seeing you soon, Harry Potter." It wasn't a question.
"Yep.
You have your mother's eyes. It seems only yesterday that she was in here herself, buying her first wand. 10 1/4 inches long, swishy, made of willow. Nice wand for charm work."
And what saved Harry Potter's life? A charm.
That's right. Great, great.
And then he talks about his dad. His dad had a mahogany wand, 11 inches pliable, a little more power, and excellent for transfiguration, which plays into the future that we learn about his dad as well.
Right. And also the fact that James is a person who changes throughout the books. We said in the last episode, James was a dick. But he isn't necessarily by the end. He changes. He switches himself.
So Harry's, the back of his neck prickles, and I'm interested to know your thoughts. Do you think it's because of the sheer amount of magic and potential that is happening inside this building? Is it because of the wand that is speaking to Harry, or is it because of the feeling he gets from Ollivander? It happens right in the beginning. You know, the bell rings and he walks and it says, Harry felt strangely as though he had entered a very strict library. He swallowed a lot of new questions that had just occurred to him. P.S. Thank goodness, right? Hagrid needed a break. And looked instead at the thousands of narrow boxes piled neatly right up to the ceiling. For some reason, the back of his neck prickled. The very dust and silence in here seemed to tingle with some secret magic.
Yes, something's
fishy.
Ollivander's, and this is kind of what we were talking about a little bit, like, why didn't Hagrid get another wand? One, because he was expelled, probably, and that is what messes him up a little bit. But also, it feels to me like Ollivander's and the notion that a wand selects the wizard. It's not the other way around. It feels much more special to me than, hey, I'm just going to go to Kohl's and pick up a wand. Like, there's a ceremony to it. There's,
why can't Hagrid get a new one? Ron gets a new one.
Right, because I feel like once you get a wand, that's yours. And you are its. And you can't just go pick up a new one over at Filene's basement. Like, you can't do it. You just, once you get a wand, that's it. That's the end of it. And it just feels so sacred, this whole part of the chapter.
So what is it? His wand calling to him that gave him that tingling feeling?
Part of me thinks so. Part of me thinks so, because once Harry touches the wand, he says that he feels a warmth in his fingertips. Yes. And, you know, obviously with the things that happen to him once he does the flick and other things go crazy around him. And that's when he says, curious. Very curious.
So he gets his holly with a phoenix feather. It's nice and supple. And I believe, we have friends joining us on our live right now that can help me. I believe, so the phoenix that gave this feather had only given two.
Yeah, no, this is what it says right here. And this is one of my favorite.
And the thing that I think I was going to believe, I think that Fox.
Oh, sorry.
Is the phoenix.
Really?
I'm pretty sure I read that somewhere, that Fox, which is Dumbledore's phoenix, is the phoenix whose feather was used in Voldemort's wand and in Harry Potter's wand.
Leslie in Facebook says, wasn't Ron's first wand a hand-me-down? Yes, it was a hand-me-down.
So maybe that's...
maybe that's the reason why.
Just worked out better.
I love this part in the books, I mean, in the movie, where... Ollivander is looking at Harry and he is saying, he sees all the things that are happening around him and he sees everything that Harry is doing and the wands are not working. And then he has this notion, he has this idea. All of a sudden, he thinks, oh, maybe this is it. Maybe this is the one. And in the movie, John Hurt's face is covered in shadow and there's a bright light behind him. It's one of my favorite shots in the entire film. It just him looking and he says, I wonder. And Harry does the whole thing. And once Harry realizes that this is his wand, Ollivander says to him, Mr. Ollivander fixed Harry with his pale stare. I remember every wand I ever sold, Mr. Potter. Every single wand. It so happens that the phoenix whose tail feather is in your wand gave another feather, just one other. It is very curious indeed that you should be destined for this wand when its brother, why, its brother gave you that scar. Like, and then he says, yes, 13.5 inches. You, curious indeed how these things happened. The wand chooses the wizard, remember. I think we must expect great things from you, Mr. Potter. After all, he who must not be named did great things. Terrible, yes, but great. Harry shivered. He wasn't sure he liked Mr. Ollivander too much, and then he paid him for his wand. There are two things that are happening here. One, it is referencing the fact that this chapter is referencing the struggle that Harry is going to have at school, but it's also referencing the fact that these two brother wands are destined for each other. Mm-hmm. It's already showing you this in the first book, in the first five chapters. These two brothers are destined. One is affixed to the other. One is created by the other. And there is this looming thing that is going to happen. But also what happens here too is the Phoenix scar, I'm sorry, the phoenix feather that is in the wand is indicative of Harry being reborn, just like a phoenix dies and comes back to life.
Yeah.
Harry is reborn as a wizard, as was Voldemort, reborn as a dark wizard once he got his wand.
And Voldemort does get to be reborn himself, as does Harry.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And the other thing that happens here, too, in this chapter is Harry's fame. Harry's fame is given. It's not earned in any particular way. Do you know what I mean?
That's what he battles with. You know, that's what he says. Like, I'm famous, but I haven't done anything. I mean, I don't even know. I was a baby. I don't remember any of this stuff. And it's part of what Harry doesn't admit, but you kind of feel it, that he feels like he needs to prove that. You know, he is the chosen one and he knows that about himself. And mm-hmm. as time goes on in the books, he knows he needs to prove his worth of this fame to be the one that helps save everyone.
Right. And of course, the way that this all happens in the book is totally different at the end of this chapter than what happens in the film. In the film, it goes right from stick to your ticket, Harry, stick to your ticket. And Hagrid just leaves.
Peace.
And like out of nowhere. And in the obviously in the book, Harry goes back and he's staring off at Hagrid.
But he still is left in the lurch. Like, he's like, oh, everything you need's in your ticket. Not at all,
right,
Hagrid.
But in the film, he goes straight to Hogwarts. Whereas in the book, he goes home.
Yes.
To the Dursleys, which again, subverts our expectations. But what also happens here is that reinforces this notion that Harry isn't necessarily made for this world quite yet. There's this I love this whole thing.
This chapter, I noticed this podcast episode has gone really long, but this chapter is so big and there's so much richness in it that...
My second favorite part of this is this. You all right, Harry? You're very quiet, said Hagrid. Mm. Harry wasn't sure he could explain. He had just had the best birthday of his life.
You're very quiet because you haven't asked me a question in 5 minutes.
I know. And yet, he chewed his hamburger trying to find the words. By the way, eating like Wendy's. Just...
No, but Hagrid fed him again.
I know. I'm just saying.
So sweet.
Everyone thinks I'm special, he said at last. All those people in the Leaky Cauldron, Professor Quirrell, Mr. Ollivander, but I don't know anything about magic at all. How can they expect great things? I'm famous, and I can't even remember what I'm famous for. It's like a Kardashian. I don't know what happened when
compare Harry Potter to the Kardashians.
Keeping up with the Potters. The night my parents died. Hagrid leant across the table. Behind the wild beard and eyebrows, he wore a very kind smile. Don't you worry, Harry. You'll learn fast enough. Everyone starts at the beginning at Hogwarts. You'll be just fine.
And that's so true, right? Like Draco Malfoy, the pale boy, is going to start the same way as Harry or as Hermione, who is muggle-born. Like, everyone does start off on square one.
And he says, just be yourself. I know it's hard. You've been singled out. And that's always hard. But you'll have a great time at Hogwarts. I did. Still do, as a matter of fact. And Hagrid helped Harry on the train that would take him back to the Dursleys, then handed him an envelope. It's a ticket for Hogwarts. And then he was looking and Harry blinked and Hagrid was gone.
Maybe he did apparate.
All of these things are playing into that. And it's true. All of these things are playing into the end of this book. And because Harry has to go back from having his best birthday ever to all of a sudden going back to the Dursleys, it reinforces the idea that Harry may not necessarily be or belong to the wizarding world just yet. He has these thoughts. He is insecure. And they're all valid. All of those insecurities are valid. So,
you know what's cool? They're at Paddington Station, like Paddington the Bear, who is also from a different world and made like London train stations like popular to the world.
Right, right.
Which I think was really cool. I was so, like, Paddington.
So that is that. One other thing, too. Gloria Costa says, great insight on the wands, Blake. Thank you. But
One more thing.
Yes, pat myself on the back. Also, what I really like about the wands and how Ollivander is telling Harry about the wands is that he's getting more insight into his parents with each descriptor of the wands. And we as readers know of these descriptors. We as readers know that eventually the transfiguration and the charms and everything come into play. But the Willow is so soft, and mahogany is such a hard, strong wood, and it's very masculine, whereas Willow feels more feminine. It just, you're getting a larger sense of his parents. His parents left him a whole ton of money and didn't tell the Dursleys about it at all. Where the hell did they get all this money, by the way?
I think that there was like a GoFundMe after they passed. Yeah. And everyone's like, that poor orphan Harry Potter.
That would make actually a lot of sense.
That's what I think. That's what I tell myself, because like James and Lily didn't have that much money and they were in the Order of the Phoenix.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to figure out. Like, where all this money
come
from?
Yeah, I think it was a GoFundMe.
All right. All right, ladies and gents, Mary, at least, are you ready to close out this bad boy?
Yes, and I think our little lass who's accompanied us all of a sudden, are you ready to close it out? Can you say yes?
Yeah.
Someone is tired and not happy. All right, let's close this bad boy out. Well, everybody, thank you so much for joining us on the Potterverse tonight. If you're listening to this on the podcast app, thank you. This is meant for you. If you're watching us live on Facebook, YouTube, or Instagram, or Twitter, thank you again for joining us in the conversations. We're having fun with it. Oh, we didn't do our emails again. You know what? We'll do it next episode.
Yeah, well, I have a little lady on me right now.
So yeah, we'll do that next
episode.
Apologies,
guys.
Everybody go to maryandblake.com. Check out all the great podcasts that are there. If you want to get in touch with us, you can go to Mary and Blake on all the social media, whether it's Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube. You can find all the past episodes of everything we've ever done on YouTube or on maryandblake.com. And go check out the Nerd Clan. Join thenerdclan.com and become a valued member there if you find enough value in this show and what we do here at Mary and Blake.
Thank you guys all so much for listening and leaving your reviews in your podcast apps of choice. 5 stars is preferable, and having a written review brings Blake and I so much joy. So thank you very much. For now, my name's Mary.
My name's Blake.
Mischief managed.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first 3 audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.